Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. December 6, 2017. The unchanging system of the upper world. Question: what is special about the Aries methodology compared to the Kabbalists who came before him? Answer: systematization. Nothing new. No subsequent Kabbalist can add anything to the work of the previous Kabbalists other than to further elaborate on the conclusions made in their discoveries and to give a greater systematic description of what may have been described with just a few phrases. That is all. Question: can it be said that the language also changed? Answer: of course. For example, if we take a physics course written 200 years ago and compare it with a current textbook, naturally there will be a difference between them. But, in principle, the essence of the information contained within them remains the same. That is why great Kabbalists, pillars appearing once in several generations, significantly added to previous discoveries. Question: did the means of attaining those discoveries remain the same? Answer: yes, because the structure of the upper world does not change. There are two forces in existence, the force of bestowal and the force of reception. The interaction between these two forces forms the upper system and controls our world through it. This is pure physics, a simple mechanism of control of our world. That is why Kabbalists cannot reveal anything new, but can only explain in greater detail what was previously disclosed. After all, that which was attained by Abraham, Moses, and the Kabbalists of the First and Second Temples continues to act and to be discovered today. There is nothing new in the upper world. It is a stable, constant system. It is just that the Kabbalists, through their attainment, add clarification for the next generation so that it may be easier to understand. In this way, in each generation the language of the explanations changes in order to make it more comprehensible for that generation. That is why Balhar Sulam, in the early 20th century, and Rabash, late 20th century, are our closest Kabbalists. From the Kabbalah Lesson in Russian, the 23rd of July 2017. A science about feelings. Question: what are feelings from the Kabbalistic viewpoint? Answer: a feeling is a sensation in the desire. Desire is the matter of all of creation, and the sensation inside the desire is called feeling. Since all of creation is one differentiated, integral desire, then all that exists inside it is feelings. We are not talking just about the universe here, but about all the worlds, about the entire, vast creation. There are two kinds of feelings found there, hatred and love, and we exist between them. Therefore, we must see how to differentiate them. On what basis do we make a verdict? The feeling that I treat with hatred or love, whether the feeling itself is called hatred or love, or do I determine how it will be in relation to a certain sensation? In other words, it is a science about feelings. From the Kabbalah Lesson in Russian, the 13th of August 2017. Lie and Truth, Part 4. Question: are love and truth always inseparable? Answer: love exists in the heart and truth in the head. Love must come from the heart, that is, I need to change all its qualities, all my desires, in order to direct them to the benefit of the loved one. This is called an open heart. I measure the truth relative to the level of a person's development, how much is beneficial for him to hear, how much can he feel and understand, and I treat him accordingly. Perhaps I will have to hide something from him, or maybe even to lie it from my loving heart. I see that it will be better for him this way. A person who seeks the truth constantly checks himself for what lie he is in. Question: why is a person attracted to the truth? Why does it acquire value for him? Answer: an informational gene from the upper degree begins manifesting in him. The upper force is called truth. The word truth consists of letters Aleph Mem Tav, that is, it covers the entire alphabet from the beginning to the end, It is the general name of the Creator, who is good and does good, absolute love and bestowal, outside of himself. We need to think how to become similar to him, even just a little. This is what is taught by the wisdom of Kabbalah. There are people in whom such informational genes are awakening. Apparently, in their basis, they were closer to the Creator and therefore the corresponding records have remained in them. Now these genes begin to manifest in them and pull them to reveal the qualities of the Creator. This gene is called a point in the heart, a desire to reveal the truth. No matter what it turns out, the main thing is that it is the truth. Even if I do not like it, I nevertheless aspire to it, as it is written, by the truth and do not sell it. Question: I know many people who absolutely do not believe in God, but nevertheless are very much drawn to the truth. Why is it so? Answer: the aspiration to truth is completely unrelated to faith. Everyone who seeks the truth is invited to come and reveal it. The wisdom of Kabbalah has nothing to do with religion, but striving for the truth is a necessary condition. From Cab TV's A New Life, the 16th of November 2017. New Life number 386. Living in a cooperative.
Hello and thanks for being with us here on The New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Tal Mandelbaum. Hello. Today, we'd like to continue our talk regarding the special Israeli concept of life in the kibbutz. We already talked about how it all started and what it came to be. And now we'd like to take another step and examine the collective, mutual, communal life, a connected life based on mutual responsibility here in Israel. Tal, please.
Yeah, on our last show we talked about the unique phenomenon of the kibbutz, a movement that truly founded the state of Israel and had a very important role in founding the state and exists to this day. Many people that are a part of this movement feel that life in the kibbutz in many ways is better than life outside of it, in terms of community life, mutuality, security. But also, throughout the years, we heard that things in the kibbutz weren't ideal. That the partnership and the mutual responsibility wasn't always based on people's free choice, but many times it was imposed on people. The motivation wasn't always strong enough, the state where everyone works and gets paid the same, where some work harder, some didn't work as hard, and this created a sense of bitterness. Some were considered to be parasites. This is a word that repeated itself a lot, and many intrigues and disputes, but still, even though that people had the desire to live together, we see that it didn't really pan out. And today we'd like to understand why, and how can we do it differently, more correctly, like you described it, to go with nature instead of going against nature. So if you could tell us, how would you build a communal life in the kibbutz according to your approach? First of all, I would definitely not build a communal life with the people that are currently living in the kibbutz, with the current kibbutz members. You have to take people that are truly ready for it, and not that they were born there and they live there because they have no other choice. They can't leave because it's their property, but you can't take that property with you outside of the kibbutz. When you're there, you have everything. When you leave, you have nothing. So, of course, it's impossible to talk to a person this way because he simply lives and these very sharply determined conditions in which he has no choice. Either he stays there because he has no choice, or he can't stand the life there any longer, and he leaves and he curses everything that he had there, and he doesn't want to ever see them again. This is how part of the people are, but there are some who really believe in the idea and want the idea. I wouldn't take them either. I'm talking from experience. Because their attitude, their method, their approach isn't a communal one, isn't truly communal, corresponding to the laws of nature, but they were taught that maybe it's worthwhile due to different egoistic considerations. Meaning, they build their communal life because it's good for my survival. And I build my method because I'm telling you then it's as if me and my method, not based on the egoistic reward that you're supposed to get in this world at all, meaning a materialistic reward, but an altruistic reward that comes to fulfill a person in the recognition of the new inner spiritual life, that a person's drawn to that. And the people that are drawn to that, it's already a new generation. It's no longer the generation that built Ganya and the other first kibbutzes. These are different ideals. They were Marxists, socialists. A person needs to get some kind of reward. What is he working for? Because the energy that he exerts has to be rewarded in some way, and their reward was a good, nice, safe life. The togetherness was also truly valued. But they wanted to build a society where everyone's equal, which is good, where they labor by their own sweat until that stopped working and they started taking workers from outside the kibbutz. And the children, they belong to everyone. And they even thought that it's possible to live without a family and that everyone is free and you can have sex with whomever you choose and connect with anyone you want. Meaning, they were searching. And after I examined it, and we met many of the different shapes and kinds of the kibbutz, let's say that in its preliminary form, what I saw is that this isn't how it's supposed to be, because the ideals aren't the same ideals. The infrastructure is different. The connection between people is different. It's truly the complete opposite, because their ideals were soil and corporeal success, materialistic prosperity in terms of connection and everything. And first and foremost, that this is the ideal, this is the goal, this is the purpose for which we exist, and this is why we're building the environment, the society, to the extent to which we understand that we have to build it, and therefore everyone comes with their idea, we discuss it, decide. Meaning we think that we can build it the way we want to, whereas I'm convinced that there are the laws of nature. We have to learn them. We have to build human society in correspondence with these laws, that it identifies, is in harmony with these laws, the laws of nature, which develop us and change us from within, and we can't change them, we can't interfere with them, we can only develop in accordance with them. And therefore, the approach is completely different. Their reward was the reward of an egoistic unification, even though that they made a big contribution and so on, but there are many such societies. There are many groups that are willing to truly sacrifice themselves, one for all and all for one and so on. But the ideal, it has to be an upper ideal for us to reveal the upper force that exists and is hidden in nature, in order for us to rise to a higher level than our matter, to the spiritual degree that it will live in us, that we'll feel it, that this will be the purpose for which we exist, that even though that bodily-wise a person will belong to the animate level, he'll be able to raise himself to the speaking level, to the human level, so that the entire world will feel that it's all one system, and that a person lives there unlimited by time, space, motion, and also the method by which these changes are implemented in a person. This is something which requires education. It is a method that comes from nature, from research, from the experience that the people of Israel have accumulated throughout the generations, and the general law being love another as thyself, which isn't just talk, and the way it's understood by these people, with a good intention and all. But it's not that they build it according to the profound wisdom that exists in the people of Israel, where once this wisdom really existed in us, and we used it till the destruction of the temple. And there's a lot about it. There's a method that we don't have to invent, but we have to simply study it and to use it to the extent to which it becomes revealed. Meaning, our entire work, precisely with the current crisis, and not like they started before it, and specifically due to the state of the younger generation that are despaired of everything, and also their parents that are also despaired, but in a different way. And this entire inclination, which is post-capitalistic, where the ego is taking on a shape that it's despaired of everything. As if it ran out of fuel. Today, when we come to a person and we start explaining that love another as thyself is nonetheless the rule of nature, and the reason for the crisis is that we're not implementing it, that's not a kibbutz. It's also not a kibbutz if you simply want to connect. But and this is something that we teach bit by bit, but that by our connection we come to the revelation of the upper force. A person nonetheless has to see that there is the revelation of a new state, a new degree here. It's not simply that we can fulfill ourselves in the corporeal life, and we have some kind of a safety net for us, for our children, for our grandchildren. But the thing is that I achieve my inner fulfillment, because our egoistic desire has reached a state where it becomes satiated with matter. And it starts understanding that it will never be fulfilled or satisfied by material pleasure. The transitional phase, it brings much. There was also a feeling that we're not developing, we're not going anywhere. I'd like to look ahead. In order to take a step forward, you have to take people that have nothing to do with the kibbutz, neither the young or the veterans that were born there, that have different stigmas, that as if they understand something. you have to take people from the city, from the modern life, and start working with them. Because in the kibbutz, they still want to go back. They want to return those, revive those old ideals, and they'll always get confused between the ideals of their forefathers and the ideals that you're bringing. This I understand. I'd like to talk about something a bit different. I'd like to talk about the collective, communal idea itself. From what I understand, you're discerning two things about the communal life. There's the communal life according to the Marxist ideas and socialist ideas. Like you said, that the founders' generation came here to Israel because they were in distress. They built the kibbutzes, and you're saying that life shows us that this idea is dying and disappearing from this world. But you're saying that there is a communal life of a different kind, and you call them the communal life according to the laws of nature. Right? Yes. So I want to understand what is the communal life according to the laws of nature. And to add to that, on our previous talk, you said that it's impossible to educate to a communal life, that this was the mistake of the founding generation, that they thought that it's possible to educate a person to live a communal life, which is something that's not possible, apparently. So communal life, according to the laws of nature, what is that? Education. But you said that it's impossible to educate to a communal life. They thought, the founders, they thought that it's possible, that it, but it's opposed to human nature, and this is why the kids left. Why? Because their education was according to their ideals. That the people that left the ghetto, they came from Russia, from the Ukraine, they fled the pogroms, different horrific states, they came here. They understood that to survive means to be together. The wall and tower settlements, this is what they needed. This is one approach. They didn't rely on studying the laws of nature and becoming a part of them, identifying with them, being in equivalence of form with the laws of nature, as we say, where the connection that we build, it has to be an integral kind of connection, general, in accordance with nature. What does that mean? It means that if today we want to build our connection, we understand that we're living in the 21st century, where the laws of society in general in the world are going to change and are changing. We're already in the post-consumer society, as if it's still dying, but it's because it's still being kept artificially, with this kind of great big infusion, like you give a dying person, you keep him alive artificially. And the method of our connection comes as a result of understanding and knowing the laws of nature, meaning that you have to connect in order to reveal a special force between us, an upper force, the force of connection. Love thy neighbor as thyself, or love another as thyself, which comes from the hidden force of nature, and the upper force that it sustains us, and not that we sustain ourselves. And it's not that we're the heroes, but we need the hero being the force which sustains all of nature, that we're going for communality, because we derive the method of connection from the Torah of Israel. The Torah by which our people existed from the days of Abraham and until the destruction of the temple. That we live this communal life not because we feel better or worse, but because we want to be in the same direction with the developmental force that's working on us and is changing us all the time. Where our wisdom of connection doesn't come from some Marxist ideals or because we're starting to connect because we have no other choice and then every kibbutz has its own style and so on. But our source is a scientific one, natural one, coming to us and is fit for our people. Love another as thyself. It's not a word or a sentence or something. It is the essence of the entire Torah. The essence of the entire Torah is love another as thyself or love thy neighbor as thyself. Yes. Why did the kibbutzes fail in teaching the concept of love another as thyself? They wanted to. They wanted to, but they didn't have the force to change human nature. What force is there? That's hidden in nature. You can call it the upper force. What do you mean by that? They try to teach love another as thyself. Reality shows that it didn't work. What next? Why do you think that there is a way to succeed if life shows they failed? First of all, they were materialists. And they didn't go along with the laws of nature. Let's put it this way. Back in those times, it was still early. Early to educate to a life of love another as thyself. Yes, they did what they could. And they failed. And how about today? That you're saying that it is possible to build a communal life. I'm trying to understand whether the communal idea is dead. There's still 70 kibbutzes that live communal life. 3,000 of these kibbutzes left the communal framework, and in some time, if we look at the direction, there will be left no communal kibbutzes. Is this the death of the communal idea, or will there be some kind of a different communal life in the future, or is communal life dead? I don't think they'll survive. They won't. No. Looking 50 years into the future, do you see any kind of communality on the horizon? Even in the few upcoming years. So you do see a communality. Yes. That's what I'm trying to understand. What will be the basis of this communality if the previous one that we saw in the Israeli kibbutz is coming to an end? What is the next generation of communality which will not fail? They tried to teach people love another as thyself. It didn't work. What's next? The purpose isn't the communality. That's not the goal. The goal isn't to prosper in the material life. But the goal is to come to the revelation of the spiritual life, which is what? It's the revelation of the special upper force in nature, which is the source of life. The founders talked about it. You can see it in the writings of Aleph Dalet Goldon. The visionaries that led the kibbutz generation had the exact same ideas. They came from these ideas, but they didn't know how to implement them because this method was still not revealed. Okay, let's talk about the implementation. Part of the people had the right ideas. The inclination was correct. The implementation was still... The exile did not end yet, meaning the time wasn't ripe. Right. They were on the boundary. Okay, in the upcoming years, will the Israeli society ripen to live a communal life? We're advancing in a way where you can turn to society only on condition that it's ready and to the extent to which it's ready and only. This determines our actions. For dozens of years, we studied, existed in a way that we don't go out at all. And only when the world started undergoing the crises, and only to that extent did we start coming out, and gradually in a very light way from afar and explaining what is the reason for the crisis. And also gradually, a hint here, a hint there, for it to be on the air. And this way, the people that understood even from these explanations, from these hints, started emerging. They understood that it's really so. They joined us. Until our society became big and strong, to the point where today we feel that the crisis is developing all around the world, where no one has any idea what's going to happen next and how to keep on living. There's no longer any method as to how to keep on existing except for ours. And here we're talking about a communality which comes out of an acquaintance with upper force. That is the reason, that the upper force is the reason for the crisis. It is the beginning of the method of our correction. And it is the goal which we achieve as a result of the correction. That around this upper idea, by using this upper force as the reforming light, by it, we come to the implementation. It's communality based on a religious idea? I don't know what you mean by the upper force. Yeah, but I don't know what you mean by religious. I'm as if talking to a secular person that has nothing to do with religion, and it doesn't matter what kind of attitude he has towards religion. Positive, negative. The thing is that he's not religious or anything. He is in recognition of the crisis. He feels helpless, doesn't know what's next. A normal person who lives his life, but he wants to know and understand what's going on with him, what's going on with the world, and in which direction are we developing? Meaning a different kind of perception. Yeah, a new kind of perception. And here we have to understand that without positioning this upper force, we can say the force of our connection, without revealing it, revealing that it is the source of life. Without that, we will not be able to neither deliver our method, and we also won't be able to implement it. We will not be able to introduce it as something safe, a force that is based on a safe infrastructure. And it's a tremendous difference between what the first pioneers wanted to do, that rely themselves on their forces, and what we're doing. We're establishing ourselves on the force of our connection. Yes, but I'm saying that the force of our connection is the upper force. What do you mean? The first pioneers, they also had the force of connection between them. No, they didn't attain it, because that would have given them the protective force, the force to advance. They didn't have the goal of revealing this force, revealing the upper life. What do you mean by upper life? The upper life is what we reveal in our connection, but that already belongs to the next level of existence, a higher consciousness. Yes, they didn't attain it because they didn't aspire for it. Of course, they didn't aspire for it. Their desire, their development, wasn't the same as today. I don't understand what were they lacking. They were connected. They felt devoted. They felt mutual responsibility. I'm talking about the generation of the founders. What were they lacking? I'm just trying to understand something simple. Yesterday's communality is dead. What is it about tomorrow's communality that will keep it alive? The right utilization of the force of connection. Right utilization of the force of connection. There's the right and wrong way to utilize the force of connection. Yes, they use that force of connection in order to succeed in the corporeal, material life. And we're of the opinion that you have to use the force of connection in order to cleave on to it and to follow it, where the connection is the main thing. But we're living under different conditions. We're living under conditions where we don't have to succeed in our corporeal materialistic life. We do it in no time with new technologies. The situation turned upside down in the past 100 years. What turned upside down? We no longer need to be concerned with our corporeal existence. With the help of all the new technologies, we can provide for ourselves in a very simple manner, so that everyone will have a good and safe life. And for our entire development, to follow the force of connection in order to rise with it higher and higher through the human, inner, deeper, spiritual degrees. And this is what we exist for. And the new generation is coming with this spirit. And so we have to reveal it in them. It's a completely different state than they were in. They were concerned with their basic needs. They needed to survive. The corporeal life having to do with the soil. We're not connected to the soil. You can grow fruits today. I don't know where. You can do whatever you feel like in a jiffy without any human intervention. So the potential relief that technology is allowing us today, it brings us to what kind of a connection? To the spiritual degree. You don't have to deal with what a beast has to deal with. Finding food, surviving, you don't have to do that. What do I have to do? Our entire problem is that we have nothing by what to fulfill ourselves. We're not talking about the hungry people, because you can easily give them what they need if we'll have the right kind of connection between us. What we need is the spirit. This is the problem. Man can't live on bread alone, and this is the state we're in. Thank you very much, Dr. Leitman. Thank you, Tal. Thanks for being with us. Till next time, all the best.